there's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live for the first time in a while. I am finally back. I did intend on being back with you guys yesterday live. But between the voice and just being fatigued and worn out from a long, long trip up to Tennessee and back. And honestly, of that trip, the most tiring part, the last two hours I spent all in Dallas-Fort Worth, getting through Dallas-Fort Worth because I listened to the traffic problems and problems to the south, problems to the north. So I went through the middle and then problems in the middle. That's just how it works, I guess. But I am back and on the attack. And today we are going to have a really cool discussion with Eric Escobar. We're going to be talking about decentralized mesh networks using something called LoRa radios. If you're like, I don't understand, it doesn't matter. You don't have to understand. You will understand enough at the end of this episode that if you want to participate in this, you'll be able to do it. And you won't have to go beg the government for a piece of paper that says you're allowed. It won't cost a ton of money, and it's so easy, even your mom can probably use it, especially once it's set up. So I think this is going to be really useful and very timely. Right now we have people all over the southeastern United States struggling with communications. Elon Musk has sent Starlink. I think a lot of people don't know this. One of the things that's really cool about what's going on there, Elon has sent Starlink in and basically made service available for free while the disaster's going down. But T-Mobile's actually partnered with Starlink. And I'm not a huge fan of T-Mobile, but I appreciate what they're doing. And they're basically allowing free cell phone use over Starlink. So that's cool. But you can't rely on that. And it might be great to have ways to communicate that are completely under your control, especially going forward. And maybe you don't want to go take a technician exam and get another piece of paper from the government. Well, we're going to tell you how to do all of that today in just a minute. Before we do, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is, who is it? I know who it is, but I can't find it. I'm still discombobulated. It is, where the heck? All right, there we go. KnifeKits.com. For those on the audio, I was just trying to find the button. Anyway, KnifeKits.com, where you can get everything you need to make knives, either completely from scratch with raw materials or a kit, as the name implies, where anyone, even me, can make a really awesome knife. Now, your first one may not be your best one, but hey, why not take a jump into this hobby and do something like make a knife with your kids or your grandchildren or your nieces and nephews or what have you. Make a family heirloom. They won't care that it's not perfect, and neither will you. It'll be something they built with their uncle or their dad or their granddad. I know if I had a knife I built with one of my grandfathers, it would be priceless to me, no matter how perfect the fit and finish was. You can also find all the stuff you need for making holsters, sheaths, and stuff like that. Really cool stuff. Check them out today. These guys have been a sponsor of this show since 2010. That's 14 years of support of this show. Remember that when you're thinking about where to make your next expenditure. Next up today, Anton's Land of Biltong. Now, you won't see me if you're on the live stream today eating Biltong meanly in front of our guest, except I already did it. That's why the little Star Wars bowl from my kids is empty. But he had to sit here and watch me eat some amazing Biltong. You got to check this stuff out. If you've always wanted to try Biltong, go get it from Anton at Anton's Land of Biltong. He will not let you down. He's right out of South Africa. He makes it the right traditional way. They also have the Doowar sausages. Those are some of my favorite. Check out the Sticks, STIX. It's basically hard, crispy Biltong in a smaller form and a lot of other really cool stuff. And remember, Anton is going to be right here at Nine Mile Farm this November talking about how to make Biltong and, of course, bringing samples. So if you're coming to the workshop, remember that will be here. With that, I want to go ahead and introduce our special guest who's been on the show before, Eric Escobar. Eric, welcome back to the Survival Podcast.
How's it going?
Good, man. Can you, before we dig into this topic, just kind of tell people a little bit about your background? Like, who is Eric? You know, what do you do professionally? How did that happen? And how did you find your way into the world of preparedness and ham radio and all this other stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. I've always been good math and science, computers, all that kind of stuff. So when I was in high school, it was one of those things. My parents were like, you should just be an engineer because you're good at math and science and all that kind of stuff. So I tried to make a decision and say, hey, do I want to be a do I want to be a civil engineer? Do I want to be a computer engineer, go into computer science, that kind of a thing? And I decided I didn't want to sit behind a desk all day, so I became a civil engineer. And then after I got my master's degree, got my professional license and all that stuff, I found out that I'm still sitting behind a desk. And so I figured, hey, if I'm still sitting behind a desk, I might as well do something that I really like. And so I got an opportunity to go into security, computer security specifically. So I've been doing that for about 10 years now, but it's kind of funny because as I'm driving around from site to site, I'm listening to some, you know, crazy redneck hippie duck farmer saying, you know what, go to the job that you're going to learn the most. And so I decided to make that hop. And, you know, I think at this point I've probably triple or quadrupled my engineering salary by going into tech and all that kind of stuff. So, turns out that a crazy redneck hippie duck farmer knows what he's talking about from time to time. And yeah, so now I do computer security. I have the coolest job in the entire world. My job is basically clients come to us and they say, hey, we think that we're secure. Can you come try and break in and find out where our security gaps are? So on any given day, I'm committing several hundred felonies, cracking passwords, breaking in. And then I get to provide a report to the CEO and the CISO and the CTOs to basically say, hey, this is how I broke in. Here's how I stole the things that I stole. Here's what you should do to increase your security. And we do tons of different clients from like military to like, you know, large, you know, Fortune 50 companies. So coolest job in the entire world. And I think ultimately, though, the best thing that I took out of this job, and again, thank you, Jack, for this, is that I work from home. And so awesome. Now I can be near my kids, my wife, all that kind of stuff. So my kids just think it's normal now to like see their dad at like 10 in the morning as he's coming in for a cup of coffee. So it's really nice to be able to be present in their lives. And that's, I mean, that at the end of the day, that's what beats everything, is that it's the quality of life of my job, not necessarily the money that it makes.
So before we move on to the subject, then, when you mentioned the cybersecurity thing and like testing, like one of my favorite stories is, I remember, this is so long back, this is, I think I was still with Fluke that I heard about this. There was a company that did what yours does, and they had a prospective client who said, we're not even worried. There is no way anybody can get into our network. And they hacked humans. They made up like 10 memory sticks, got onto the property and pitched them in the parking lot. And 3 of the 10 were picked up by employees, taken into the office, and plugged into their computer to see what was on them. And they put like a bunch of cat pictures and shit on there so it looked legit. So they were playing around with it, left it in there longer. And of course, it uploaded malcode, and that created a backdoor. And they were able to basically take the entire network over in a week. And they never even had to hack from the outside. Basically, they sent in their malcode on devices that the employees willingly plugged into the computer. I never did hear if anybody got fired for that, but I would bet somebody did.
And you know what? So you just described my job to an exact T. We do my forte is wireless, but I do physical security, network security, all that kind of stuff. So one of my main like ruses or social engineering techniques is I have like a utility, like reflective vest, hard hat, that kind of thing. I'll walk in and I'll say, hey, you know what? We're doing some work out back. We cut the grounding rod. You mind if I hop under your desk to check to make sure all your outlets are grounded? I just want to make sure you don't get shocked. They walk away for about 10 minutes. I put in a key logger behind their computer, plant my malware in. I'm in, I'm out. I say your outlets look good, and they have none the wiser known that, you know, we have a guy sitting out back that's now in their network doing all the bad stuff. So yeah, shameless plug. If anybody wants me to take a look at their network, you know, my email is out there. So, by all means, anyways, that is not,
we can't keep going there, but I have actually seen key loggers that look like a USB cord.
Yep, I have
extra cord laying there. No one pays attention to it.
The one that's really awesome too that I have is, it looks like an iPhone charger, white iPhone charging cable or Android cable, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But when it plugs in, it'll download your photos, your notes. It'll basically do like an iCloud backup to that local device, which is pretty cool. But yeah, anyways, not a cybersecurity podcast, what I do.
I can get people's head turning a little bit. Can you give us a brief overview of this thing called Meshtastic and how it works? Because when I got this, I'm like, okay, this sounds like, I'm technical because I have a podcast. And as I've said, if you want to make somebody laugh, tell Tom Lucero, who runs all my technical shit for me, that I'm highly technical. And he'll laugh until his belly hurts, right? So how does this thing actually work? What does it do?
Yeah, so it's funny because I have to explain this to my family members who are not technical at all. My mom's a very smart woman. She needs help updating her iPhone. So it, essentially the way that this works is you have a device. If you're in the, video right now, it looks like this, right? It's like a little, basically a little bit like a walkie talkie.
Yep.
And essentially the way to think of that is that you are sending text messages, from point to point, device to device. So it's like a walkie talkie, but for text messages only. And the nice part about it is that every device that is basically powered on will act as a repeater for the other ones. So if you have, say, somebody, your friend at the top of a hill, that they have their device, and you have, two people, one on either side of the hill, they can basically relay, they can hop through that other person's device to be able to communicate around, structures, objects, and that sort of thing. So basically just think of it like a text message that can hop around through all of your friends' devices. So that it gets to where it needs to go.
And from what you were explaining to me is it can be encrypted, and that doesn't affect this ability to retransmit, basically, and to act as a repeater. So I can keep my messages secure, but I can use your device to help reach my other party.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody wants to see examples of it, if you're listening to the audio and you can't, you want to look at it later. If you go to fresnomesh.com, so Fresno is the city that I live in, so I'm doxing myself. But fresnomesh.com, fresnomesh.org, I have kind of like pictures of all the things that we're talking about right now. And anything that is like link-wise is points back to TSP, so you're going to get Jack some sweet referrals. But basically when we talk about routers, we're talking about devices that – routers are like the bigger, like heavier devices that have like maybe bigger antennas on them. And so I can set them up. Anybody can set them up. And so when Jack's device, my device, when they send a message out, they can send an encrypted message. And what happens there is that when the router, the big repeater, basically receives it, all it does is it just repeats that message. So it doesn't know what the contents of that message are. It just repeats whatever it heard. And so even though it doesn't understand the message, it repeats it for you. And so
sure.
The awesome part about that is that you basically can set this up, like a city can set one of these up, or, a group of people can set it up, and, Jack and I come into town to do some backpacking, and then, hey, we can still use all of those communications in order, in order to basically communicate without having to trade encryption keys with all the locals in the town.
And real quick, before we move on, we're not going to answer this right now. It actually might even be in the interview. A lot of times questions are, but if you want to ask us a question, please do exactly what Hosk did here and put the word question in all caps, followed by your question. I will star it and we will come get you at the end. So I got you, bro. And it was good seeing you this weekend as well. Can you explain why the average person would think a mesh network is cool or useful? I think that as soon as you use a word that people don't know today, especially if they're like my age or older, it's like click. It's like a switch. I don't want to talk about this anymore. And some of you young ones, I want to tell you, it's about 35 where you start feeling that way. Like, I know enough shit. But I really do think this is cool. And I think it's fairly off the shelf, honestly. So what would this do for the average person, the average boomer or older Gen Xer like me?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny because I, with all my coworkers, they kind of think I'm nuts from time to time. And, if anything, current events have shown, with the hurricanes that have come through, with the Verizon outage, the AT&T outages that have happened, all of a sudden now normal people that would never have thought that this idea was kind of neat are now realizing, oh, shoot, maybe it would be helpful to be able, if I can't send a text message on my iPhone, to have some other means of communication to communicate with someone. So a lot of different use cases. One that I like to use it for a lot, you go backpacking where there is no cell service. Great. You said, everybody has their own node. Maybe throw one of these up in a tree. And now you have text message communications for miles and miles and miles in the backwoods. Current hurricane situations like we're in right now, hurricane goes by, put an antenna on your roof, or, just walk outside with one of your devices, and now you can send text messages, miles away, and then, potentially dozens of miles away if you have a repeater that you can hit that's still up. So, camping, backwoods, just for fun, decentralized communications. Honestly, the thing that I love about it is that you don't need a license to use it. And you can basically communicate point to point with people without needing any other infrastructure.
Now, we keep saying text messages, and that's the form of the message.
Right.
It's not a substitute for the text messaging you're using every day with your uncle in Philadelphia who's not on this network, right? Like, correct. I can't text from this network and somehow magically end up like on the internet, on the phone of somebody else somewhere else across like the Verizon network.
Correct. There are ways that you can configure that are very techie and only for the technical members of the audience. So I wouldn't suggest that. But yeah, that's an absolute good distinction to make, is that you can't use this to send like a text message to your mom, let's say, if she's on the Verizon network. Basically, the way that it presents itself is you have like your walkie-talkie device, and that Bluetooth to your phone, to an iPad, or you can USB connect it to a laptop, basically any means of communication. And if you're using, say, an iPhone, which is typically how I use it, there's a Meshtastic app, completely open source. So you can dig into the code if you are a nerd like myself and you want to check it out. But basically, it just looks like any other text messaging app, like a WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, anything like those. And you Bluetooth connect that to your handheld device. And so you can just send text messages from basically iPhone, or, you know, whatever device that you want. So your phone is the nice piece. Everybody has a phone, right? So your phone is what you use as like the messenger piece. And then the handheld is what actually is doing the transmitting of the message.
I guess what I'm getting at is, like, if I'm in Dallas and the person I want to communicate with is in Austin, about 300 miles away,
mm-hmm.
I'm probably not doing that unless there's enough mesh in between for that to happen, right? Like, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about badass ham guys that can bounce something off the stratosphere and talk to Australia. That we have to be kind of in radio range.
That is absolutely correct. And I like to say that, you know, this is kind of like the gateway drug to getting someone involved in ham radio. Like, how can I get farther? Take your technician license and get your call sign. Right?
You freaking dudes are always doing that shit, man. You are more evangelical than the top five evangelical faiths put together. I always wait for somebody I'm going to knock on the door and, have you heard about our Lord and Savior ham radio yet?
But, not wrong. That's why I was like, man, Jack is going to see some other radio thing when I put in the speaker request, and he's never going to let me.
Especially with a name like this. If we can't give each other shit, what's the point of being in the world together, man? So we don't need any kind of license or anything like that.
Right.
What are some practical use cases, like in off-grid or emergency situations within the limitations of the range?
Yeah. So talking about range real quick, because that's a lot of people's, you know, main question. If you're in like a dense urban environment, you can get a couple miles. So the benefit of this type of technology is that you can use is that if you're in an urban environment and you have like a shorter antenna, it's going to go, you're going to get a couple of miles. And that's where you would want to put, you know, if you have like a community that's involved, you get a bigger one with a bigger antenna. And that can go, the max I've ever gotten off of my big repeater is about 100-something miles. You know, pretty consistently, right? So you talking about your 300 mile ones, if you get three of those, you know, they're all point to point on mountains, like perfect line of sight and everything. Definitely possible, but the use cases are kind of what I mentioned. You know, you have disaster communications, right? In case of an emergency, obviously the survival podcast, you're going backpacking, you're going hunting, you're going, you know, just basically anywhere where there's not, great cell service. It's just a great way to communicate, and it's relatively inexpensive. The other thing too that I use it for is that these devices have like little just snap-on sensors if you want. So you can put a remote, you know, weather station out there. So if you want to, like, I have one of these that's like up on a hill, and it's like, oh, I wonder what the weather is up there if I wanted to go hiking today and see, oh, it's, you know, chilly or not, right? So you can get tons of different sensors, tons of different information. But really the off-the-shelf thing that most people are going to care about is you can send messages you know, anywhere from 10 to 100 miles in pretty good settings.
That's pretty awesome. And I think another like way to think about this is not everybody's going to do everything.
Correct.
So if you have one person in your network who is a ham operator that can reach outside and gain information from outside, then that information, that person can be a relay. And you guys do that all the time in many situations. I've been on disaster sites where there's ham radio operators that will get a message out for somebody so that they can tell. Just basically, I think the number one thing people want to do in that situation, they're stuck behind the lines. They have friends and family out there, and they want them to know they're okay.
Yep.
Like, because, you know, when they finally do get their cell phone back on, there's like 9,327 voicemails.
Yeah.
You know? And I did hear a pretty cool little hack for this for people who are in areas where you can get cell service, but you're worried about like the power on your phone. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about directly. But it was like, check your shit once an hour, turn your phone off. Mm-hmm. And every time you check your shit, update your voicemail and say, you know, today it's Wednesday, October 9, 12:19 PM. I'm fine. right? Yeah. So don't leave me a message to see if I'm fine. Leave me a message if you need to leave me a message. And because that's the number one thing that's happening is people are reaching out, trying to find out if you're okay. But man, if you can even have one person that can help get that out, hey, or there's a whole shitload of people over here that need help, right? We only need one, you know, trunk line out, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yep. Yeah. No, absolutely. And then you reduce load on the cell network as well, too, when that happens. So then other people can get their calls through as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So how difficult is it to set up? I mean, because this is what happens. And I don't think that's the case here because I actually did some research into this. Right. But usually you get somebody that's done some technical thing and they say it's easy. Anybody can do it. And you say, well, how do you do it? So first thing you do is you learn a 47,000 character programming language, and then you climb up in a tree, and then you hold your tongue a certain way, and you point it at the sun, and like there's a like this list that comes in of this easy thing is usually bullshit. But I don't think that's the case here. This actually seems fairly straightforward and simple to set up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, if you go to that FresnoMesh.com website that I set up, basically it's all the questions that I get from random people. I just put all kind of like the answers there. There's like a getting started YouTube one, but the best one that I found to do it is, basically you get this pocket mesh. So if you look at the mobile devices on there, there's one, it's like $100 and it is the Cadillac. It is like the best one you could buy. It has battery, GPS, like all that kind of stuff on it. You basically turn it on, you Bluetooth it to your phone, and then it'll ask you to say, hey, what region are you in? The region basically just sets the frequency for the radio. And then you're off to the races. It comes pre-installed with the public channel. So you can basically talk to anybody who's on a public channel with it. And that's pretty much it. So, it's probably a 5 minute setup at most. And again, you can go dig in as much as you want, but the basic configuration is plug it in, turn on the power, Bluetooth it to your phone, and then you're off to the races. Just select your region and you're good to go.
And so the way you use it then is I would have something like a smartphone and I would install an app that goes with it.
Yep. Yeah. So I'll throw it up right now. So if you just go search any of the app stores for MeshTastic, there's an app. It looks like this, right? You can't really see it in the video, but it'll basically just connect it. And then you can see a list of nodes and a map. And so you can see, you know, different geographical people, like where they're on their map, if they're broadcasting their GPS location. So it's nice because everybody has a phone, you know, and so you can use that basically the nice screen, the, you know, all the autocorrects, all the things that you normally use on your phone, and the radio device that you're Bluetoothing to, that's the conduit that your message is used to go out. And the other nice thing too is that if you are like, you've spoken before about like, hey, you know, your whole Pringle can method of, you know, if you're going somewhere, right, and you go set that down. The nice thing about this is that if you enable the GPS on your device, you could see where Dorothy is right now when you're sending her messages, right?
So
you can enable GPS on there and see where everybody actually is. And it's not on by default, but if you go dig in the settings and search Google or ChatGPT for about 3 seconds, you can find out pretty easily, hey, you can turn on, GPS that only your private people can see, which I love because it, you know, passively updates, I think, like every 15 minutes, and you can change it, you know, whatever you want. But effectively, you don't really do anything to the device itself except for power it on and keep it charged. It's really your phone that has all the settings, all the options. So, you know, I hate dabbling and you know, trying to plug in different things on like a radio or like whatever. And so this is all just done on the phone through an app, and it's all open source too. So if you're ever concerned about any of it, you can go dig in, mess with the code yourself if you're really interested in it. And if you're a nerd like me, you can plug it into your laptop and there's like full command line interfaces that you can run with it. There's even Jack, I'll throw you back to your old school days, that there's BBSs that you can install. So if you really care about it, you can have your own BBS channel where like you can, you know, bulletin board stuff. So you can say like, hey, this area is flooded, this area is here. So people can check into like a centralized node and like post topics through it as well. Again, that's the advanced features of it. Really all you need is just the app and the device itself.
So we have some questions about encryption. We've already kind of said you can do that. So here would be a theoretical use case. You tell me if this would be valid. Let's say I and my brother-in-law, who's a cop, wanted secure encrypted communication. He lives about 45 miles away. This is Dallas-Fort Worth. And this is going to lead me to another question in a second. But I'm just betting in a city with 6.2 million freaking people. or a metro area with that. There's probably some other people in my area doing this. It is very conceivable that I up here near Azle and he down in Grand Prairie could communicate with this. If we set that up, it would be a very secure, because one, we're encrypting it, but two, we're also kind of in this other place. Like, we're not going across the internet or the cellular networks. So if we wanted a really robust, as far as reliability and secure mechanism of communicating, this seems like it would be pretty damn good for that.
Yep, absolutely. And I just Googled it while you were talking right now, and there's a whole like Dallas mesh, and you can see like they're like hill mounted solar panel nodes that are all out there. And essentially the way that you make like your own like secure channel, yes. And you can Google it, but basically what you do is you just generate a random password. It just says like randomly generate, and then it creates a QR code. So your brother-in-law would just scan the QR code on his phone to your phone.
Okay.
And once that QR code is scanned, you both have, you know, that symmetric key, and then everything is encrypted using that. I think it's AES 256. So like, I mean, some crazy whatever encryption, right? You're never going to break that type of encryption. But it's easy. It's easy to implement. You just scan a QR code. So next time you're with them, you just, you know, have a family QR code. And honestly, you can just text that to each other because, you know, just say, hey, here's the new QR code, right? And just go from there.
So that was kind of, you said you checked while I was talking, and that was going to be my next question. Like, if someone's thinking about picking up some of this gear and they know flat out, like, the main people I want to communicate with are over there, but based on topography and shit, this isn't going to directly work. I'm going to need other participants, other people in the mesh around me. Is there a way that they can check to see what's already there? And is that all people who have willingly kind of said, I'm here? Because
yes.
I would imagine there's probably some you don't know about. Like I probably, unless I did something that was really useful, like put up a tower or something, I probably wouldn't let everybody know that I was doing it.
Yep. And there's a website called meshmap.net. So
okay.
Mesh, like meshtastic map.net. And if you just it's basically just a, you know, like a Google Maps looking type of map, and you can go find your area, and anyone that has like publicized their devices, you can see them right there. The other thing just to throw out there, and again, all the links are in this like Fresno Mesh, you know, website that I have in the, hopefully in the show notes. And essentially everything's in there. So if you have questions about it, you can go look there. But, the devices that you want to buy are all 915 megahertz, so 915 megahertz. Basically anybody in the United States, that's the frequency that they all run on. So, as long as your device is that 915 megahertz, you can communicate to anybody that's involved in any of this, and then use that meshmap.com. To see, yeah. So if you scroll in on that, you can see all the different nodes that are available. As you start scrolling in, it'll, you know, the bubbles will start to move around.
There's like 1,200 in the country right now, but like,
yep.
And these are just, like I said, these are probably the ones of people that said, hey, here I am.
Yep, yeah. That's
so
exactly right.
There's one very close to me. And there's one down in, and then my brother-in-law's like right over in
Mid-Cities,
the shaft of the, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but I can't not mention it now that it's sitting here in the middle of the screen. But Dallas, Fort Worth, the Metroplex and the roads, and it looks like a giant penis. And now that you've seen it, anybody that's ever seen it, you'll never not see it. Dallas is the ball sack, the Mid-Cities are the shaft, and Fort Worth is the head. And I-30 is the main vein right down the middle. So my brother-in-law in the shaft could communicate with me just northwest of the head. And that's, again, these are just the ones that we know of that have said, hey, here I am.
Yeah, there's a lot of unpublicized ones that are out there. But the other thing, too, that I want to mention is because when people hear, like, if anybody's close to a ham radio operator, they're going to think, like, oh, my gosh, what is the power of these things? I can run one of these off of a single 18650 battery for an entire week. So like when I talk about, like, the big routers that you put on a mountain, like, this is one of them. It's, like, the size of my hand.
Yeah.
And this, I have one of these on a mountain that is, you know, like a couple miles away from me.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it in 3 months, and it has just sat up there for 3 months. No, like, didn't require.
It's on solar, though.
It's all solar, all completely solar, and it's never dipped below 90% of charge capacity.
So you're saying I could squirrel one away somewhere in a strategic location, just leave it.
100%.
No power whatsoever, because I'm just going to run off battery and solar. And it sounds like their power draw is about, like, these freaking solar lights that I have on my property. Like, you're like, how is that thing still working? I have someone I put in, like, 5 years ago, and I'm like, the casing's going to melt from the sun. before it the batteries die in it because they're just not using much energy.
And what's really funny is you mentioned those solar lights. There's whole like YouTube channels and mesh like Discord channels where they basically have those solar lights that you're talking about. They hollow out the inside and they put in one of these devices because it has the solar, it has the battery, it has the charge controller. We just need to suck a little bit more of that juice out of there. And then
just take the light away and plug in the device.
That is exactly it. So, you know, I have not done this, but I've seen people that go into like, you know, national forest areas and they put like a nice solar light at a top, you know, like outhouse kind of a thing. And it's like, oh, look how nice. They have a solar light with an antenna on it. And that now that is, you know, a core.
It's literally a repeater for the mesh.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another unit in the mesh.
So this brings something up too. Like, let's say I'm going backwoods hunting with a group and there's no cell service and we each have like a little mobile device. But what we could do is kind of our central area that we're covering, we could pop one of these things up in a tree or something.
Yep.
Because what I was thinking is like, if I'm too far away to reach you, well, it doesn't do me any good now. Like I can hop over to the next valley and ask for help, but I can't tell my buddy, hey, I'm leaving my stand early. I'll be back at camp. But we can locate something that allows us to do that. And apparently there's not much of a limitation there because of what you just said. I didn't realize that you could take like the thing you're holding up. Like, honestly, this is, it almost looks like this.
Yeah.
Like, hold that back up. This looks
that, cool. That is almost exactly the enclosure, I think.
Except yours is a little bit bigger. You know,
mine's
this
a little bit bigger. Yeah.
An air pump.
Yeah.
This is an air pump. Like when you go fishing and you have, instead of having your batteries die, you set your air pump on top of your minnow bucket and
That's almost 100% it. And so it's funny because so that is exact use case, right? You go hunting, you find a high spot. I've attached one of these to like a drone just to test it out. And so you just throw that drone up a couple hundred feet and now you can talk hundreds of miles in any direction if you're on relatively flat terrain or a balloon. A lot of hot air balloon, weather balloon, you know, things, strap one to a balloon. They're exceedingly light. And so just, hey, now you have your own tower out in the middle of nowhere. Or honestly, really what I do is when I go backpacking, I'll just have like a little collapsible pole, cast a line over the tallest tree that I can find, you know, hoist one up and tie it off. And now I just have, you know, a device in a tree and that can cover, you know, pretty much anything that I could hike in a couple of days time. So, you know, obviously terrain plays a big part of it, but yeah, that's an absolute use case that you could use it for.
It seems like in time we could damn near cover the majority of the country. I mean, I'm sure there's some space across places like Nebraska, Wyoming and stuff that it's going to be last, like just like the cellular networks. But I don't see any reason we couldn't eventually have a mesh that was like northeastern United States down to Texas over to California.
Yep. Well, and so the other things to kind of keep in mind, like how the mesh like works itself is that you by default get three hops. So when you take your device out of the box, you get three hops from one to two to three, right? So you will hop through three devices before the message just basically stops, right?
Oh, okay.
What you can do though is that if you had some special setup, something that you really wanted to do, you can make that hop, I think up to like 10 or 15 hops. So you could just keep going over and over and over. Now, obviously you're saturating the network. You're creating a bunch of traffic because you are just repeating over and over and over. But if you had a specific use case, you wanted to use maybe a different channel than everybody else would on the public net, you could do some absolutely wild things as far as like getting distances. Like I would not like it, I don't like if you really wanted to for probably about $1,000, I bet you could get a message from coast to coast if you lined it up properly.
Really?
Yeah. I'm thinking about it. I'm pretty sure you could do in a couple. I mean, this would be something that the ham radio nerds would totally geek out on, you know, but if you had somebody up on Mount Whitney, right. If you had, you know, you had some of these like high points, I bet you could do it. No problem.
Wow. Wow. So, the other thing I see in this based on what I like summarily looked up getting ready this morning is that the barrier to entry is pretty damn low, not just technologically, but economically. Like one of the things that I think holds people back from using something like a Start9 server, like the most basic entry level products, like $600.
Yep.
Where I think this, you got a plug and play product for under $100 easy.
Yeah. And if you don't care about the battery being in it or GPS being in it, again, in the link, the fresnomesh.com, there's ones you can buy a pair of them for $50 that are just USB. So you plug them into like a USB, you know, your phone charger outlet. And I mean, like you can start with just a pair of them for $50, right? So, okay. The entry price is so cheap that the best one. So the one, if you're in the chat right now, is this Pocket Mesh. And again, it's all on the website and everything like that. This is the Cadillac. It has GPS. It has a full couple days battery in it. It has, power efficiency, and it's $100 or less than $100. Right. So, I mean, you're so talking
like top end is what you're saying.
Yeah. And this is like the top end. Like this is as good as you could, as you could ever like build or buy for $100. Right. So the entry is so exceedingly reasonable that, it doesn't like in my mind, I just have like three or four of these that just chill in my glove box. So when I'm out and about, if I need communications, I could just go, basically litter my area with these, yeah. I mean, to the point where like, if you really wanted to, you could just wrap one in bubble wrap and throw it on a roof somewhere and now extend range. And for like $30, if a message is important to get out, $30 is a donation to getting that out there. Right. So, yeah, there's lots of things you can do with it.
I guarantee you there's not a person that's in, a bad situation in North Carolina right now that wouldn't pay $30 to let their loved ones know where they are and that they're okay.
100%. And that's, yeah. And I have one of my coworkers is in Asheville, and he's like, yeah, some places have complete and absolute devastation, right? And so it's like, if you just had a handful of these, like it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to solve everything. But just to get a message out, that's what this is perfect for.
So let's talk about setup. Well, first of all, before we go on to that other device that looked like a bigger version of my
this thing,
my air pump, right? You said it's a router.
Yep.
So it's basically just a repeater is the way to think of it.
So, and again, this gets into the app. So any device can be a client. So a client is like your handheld, like your standard, what you keep in your hand. And in the settings, you can make any device a router. So it's not like some custom hardware is one thing or the other. You just basically say, hey, this router thing, I want it to receive all messages, repeat all messages. You set this up as basically a more powerful node, is all that it is. So there is nothing different. Actually, the internal communications on this are exactly the same. Like the internal hardware is exactly the same as far as radio and everything goes. Good. This just has a bigger antenna. And the bigger antenna is like, basically you want the bigger antenna if it's going to be static and straight up and down because just range and reception. With a small little handheld thing like this, you don't necessarily want just a giant antenna sticking out of your back pocket or anything like
that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So here's my question then. You said the little one is the Cadillac.
Yep.
How much does that bigger one cost?
So the enclosure for this bigger one is $60, and that's the solar enclosure, that everything like that. The internals of it are maybe another $30. So the internal radio, like little device in there, let me see if I can open it up. This is what internally is in there. It's this little tiny radio, and it's about $30.
About $100 all in.
It's $100, and then the antenna is where you're going to spend more money. So if you buy a really big antenna, so I have a really big antenna that you can see on the website, that antenna could be anywhere from $50. But essentially, your Cadillac of like mountain nodes mounted, in the Sierra Nevadas kind of a thing is going to run you maybe around $200. So
that's what I'm getting at. Like if I wanted to put the best version of that I could up on my shop building.
$200 max. Yeah, $200 max.
Probably cost me more to have because I'm not going up there.
Yep.
To have my handyman put the pole up for me than the device would actually.
That is 100% it. Yeah. So you're looking at like all in, and like that's where you can get crazy because a lot of my hill nodes are all like DIY because we're in like a fire zone. So it's like in a metal enclosed case and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, effectively your Cadillac like router that you're going to go put up there, your like heavy hardcore, like heavy duty node is going to be $200.
Is that what, if you were me, like, because we're at, I am never the person that says money doesn't matter, but at this range for something like this, money doesn't matter, right?
100%.
Right? And I do have a shop building and the roof's about 14 foot high and I could put a pole up there. Is that what you would do? Because I think that would actually help other people in the DFW. Mm-hmm. And since I'm north of Fort Worth significantly and there's all rural that way up to the north of here, it seems like that would be a beneficial thing for other people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I would recommend. What I do is I have lots of tall trees in my backyard. I have a 70-foot tree. So I basically got one of these guys and I cast the line over and I pull it up. And so it just dangles in my tree 70 feet high, and it provides, I can easily get 20 miles line of sight off of that one. So I have the one that sits basically here at my desk, one that's 70 feet up in a tree. So when I send a message, it goes from my handheld unit to my tree, and then my tree up into the Sierra Nevadas, right? So that's how it kind of does that hop. So yeah, if you are looking to build out your own thing, get one handheld and then one device that's as high up as you can get on your property, and then you'll be able to reach pretty much anything from there.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I could easily put that thing about 16 foot up, and there's nothing blocking it at that point.
Yeah, and then you'll be astounded. So again, if I know I keep saying the website, but that's just where everybody asks me questions. I just throw pictures basically up on there. You can see that, like, I've gotten 150 miles right is my record. But I from being in the central part of California, can reach down basically in the LA and up into the Bay Area. So, I mean, through multiple hops, you can get really darn far, you know, if it's configured, or, you know, if your network is set up like that.
I think I'm going to put one of these in, even if I don't use it that much, just to help other people, because it seems like a pretty simple thing to do.
Yep. Yeah. It's very, very simple. You know, if you can run a tiny little screwdriver to screw tiny little screws in there. I mean, that's probably the hardest part of all of it is getting everything screwed in. But
honestly, for me, if I want to get it up as high as I can, it's getting up on that shop building and not breaking my neck. That's the hardest part from what I'm hearing here. What's the difference between like buying a fully functional Mestastic node and building a DIY version? It seems like you could just buy off the shelf, bolt it on, and go.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to do a lot of them, maybe there's a reason not to. Like, it's cheaper to do it by DIY.
Honestly, I think buying the off the shelf stuff is great for like 90% of the people out there. Then there's gonna be the other 10% that are nerds in the most loving way that I can say that. And so like they're gonna be the people that want to snap on a temperature sensor, a humidity sensor, right? So if you want to like make a device that like has different sensors on it, like if you have like a say like a remote hunting lodge, you can have a motion sensor on one of these. So you know, hey, did somebody bust into my remote hunting lodge that doesn't have cell service or anything like that? So you could have something like that. And so that's where somebody would want to get a little bit more custom, is if you want to have sensors, if you want to have it turn on a motor, or like if you wanted somebody to turn on like a water pump that's, you know, miles away and there's no infrastructure there, you could use that as kind of a control mechanism if you wanted to do something like that. So basically, if you just want to send messages, buy off the shelf. Everything is probably about as good as that you're going to get. You know, the economies of scale are there to where it's that cheap. If you want to do something more custom, that's basically where you're going to want to build something more custom. And as you get deeper into it, that's where people are like, okay, but I really wanted to do this. How do I? And that's when you would DIY it. The only other reason.
Figure it out for yourself, nerd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things that like, that if you want sensors, if you want additional like sensors on there, or for me, the reason that I DIY'd it is because I live in like crazy high fire risk danger area, you know? And so I enclose all of my devices that are remote, like up on the mountains in like a, like steel junction box basically.
Yeah.
So that if something happens to one of those batteries or whatever, that I'm not going to be the reason that there's a forest fire. Right. So that's why I DIY mine, is because, I'm extra cautious.
But it sounds like it could literally be like my own little private weather station network too. Like 100%. If I wanted to know what the temperature barometric pressure is, you know, at this remote location that I have, I would know that if I set up everything to do it.
Yep. And even for that, if you go buy the, again, things that are in the website, they're like the sensors are literally just snap-on sensors. You like literally push them on and it's like, oh, now I have, and it automatically shows up in the thing that says like, oh, we see you have a temperature sensor on board. We're just going to report temperature every 30 minutes, or barometric pressure, humidity, light levels, you know, whatever. They sell a gajillion different types of sensors. If that's something that somebody's interested in, and the sensors are cheap. The sensors are like $4 for one.
Okay.
Right? So, the other thing that I want to note too is that these rack boards, so the rack wireless is kind of like the gold standard of these. They have onboard solar controllers, so you don't need a separate piece of hardware to also like ingest solar into it. So if you have anything with like that matching connector, it'll automatically do the like voltage regulation and that kind of thing to keep the batteries charged, which is a problem with some of the other hardware out there. So basically, you know, buy anything that has a RAK is the name of the board. Anything that's rack, that's the gold standard. And it's like, this board is $25. So the gold standard being $25 is, you know, money is no object at that point.
Yeah. Unless you want 1,000 of them.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah. Unless you want 1,000.
If you want 2 or 3 and you're going to bitch about $25, you don't, I'm just going to say you don't really want it.
Yeah, you don't want it that bad. The one thing that I will note, so there is a hacker convention called DEF CON every year that I go to, been going there for like a decade. And that's where these are really popular, right? Like weird, you know, hackers are interested in decentralized encrypted communications, right? And so what's nice is that's kind of a time where everybody gets together and they stress test the network. So this year, DEF CON, I think we had close to 1,000 nodes on the network, anywhere between 500 and 1,000 nodes. And so that's kind of like the high end limitation. So if you have a group of people that are going on a backpacking trip, you are not going to overwhelm the network. I can guarantee you. If there's a bunch of nerds out there, spewing out packets into the air, you're not going to overwhelm the network with just a backpacking party.
So we've mentioned there's no license requirement, but my experience with the Department of Making You Sad, i.e. the government, is they stick their fingers in everything. They want to regulate everything. You know, where I grew up, shooting out my back door, you're not supposed to get an earth disturbance permit to plant a tree. No one does it, but you're supposed to. Is there any place that regulation overlies this? Is there any way that this has been set up to comply with, you know, we have basically unlicensed communication? How does that all work?
So these devices are in something called the ISM band. ISM band is basically like Wi-Fi, right? Wi-Fi, and there's actually types of Wi-Fi that run on this 900 megahertz. And so it is in that band with like medical devices, scientific devices, and that kind of thing. So by basically saying, hey, you can't use these devices, they would have to outlaw an entire band of like the spectrum that is basically set for these.
Okay.
You know, so it's not just, hey, these mesh task devices are the only thing using it. There's like the reason that they are on this is because this whole set of radio spectrum is basically set for unlicensed devices to operate in. So it's kind of the wild west of like the spectrum, because there's random things on here from insulin pumps to like, you know, random things on there that they would also then have to outlaw to do it. The one thing that I will say that is kind of coming down is the FCC is trying to sell some of this licensing or some of this space. So it basically might be a little bit more congested, but you should still be able to use them, no problem.
So then the only question is, how long before we have an aging boomer senator from Alaska streaking about filling up the tubes?
Yep. The other thing too is that they sell these types of boards with like different frequencies as well. So if somebody wanted to get really crazy, they could just buy ones that are on different frequencies and use a different set of the spectrum. I mean, then you're kind of breaking the network.
For a second there. Hopefully he'll come back.
Oh, can you hear me?
Right. Yeah, you're fine. You just locked up for about 10 seconds.
Got it.
We know what you said, though. We're
great.
So the other thing I really liked about this when you sent it to me, there's nothing proprietary. This is open source.
Correct.
Can you kind of talk about how that works and why that's important with a project like this?
Yeah, so open source, if somebody that like doesn't really know what it is, it basically means that it's open to anybody who wants to hack it, change it, fork it, you know, you name it. If you want to kind of make this kind of your own thing, you absolutely can if you have the technical prowess to be able to do something like that. But it also means too that there's no like gremlins lurking in the code somewhere that somebody placed. So there's not going to be a backdoor, because people are watching the code and anybody can maintain the code and look at it themselves. If you want to go on GitHub is the website that I believe it's hosted on. So you can go look at that, inspect it for yourself. And you can modify it to your own end. So like when, you know, there's like a Halloween edition of this, there's like a DEF CON version of it. If you want the DEF CON, you know, version of Meshtastic. So the nice part about it is that if some developer, you know, kind of like crypto, right? If some developer does something you don't like, you can always fork it and make and keep it your own, or you don't have to upgrade to the version that does the thing that you don't like. Everybody can stay on the same version. So from that perspective, it's not like somebody's going to rug pull you and change everything and now your mesh isn't going to work.
So this is something I actually want to talk about with open source. Like, so Hugs says, unless the government got their fingers into it. See, this is one of the beautiful things about open source. And this is your world, so you can kind of testify this. There are people whose goal in life is to find somebody trying to put something into open source code.
Yep.
They spend their existence eating Twinkies, drinking beer behind a computer screen, tearing code apart, and there are hundreds of thousands of these people that any open source project that comes out, they want to be the guy that found the cheater. Like there's, I don't think there's anything more thoroughly reviewed for this purpose than an open source code.
Yeah. And I work with some of those people. So, I can attest to the fact that, so you get something called a CVE. So it's kind of like a public notification saying like, hey, this person found it, right? So you can link your blog, your Twitter, all that kind of stuff. You get the hacker notoriety when you get that CVE. And the more severe the bug, the better. If you get like a CVE 9.9, everybody's like, wow, that's incredible.
He's a Superman, right?
Yeah. Right. So. And you know, you have hackers like myself that will put those on our resume when, you know, a big company tries to hire us as like, hey, look how good I am. Look at those kinds of things. So yeah, open source code is definitely reviewed. And, you know, because different projects build upon other projects, the deeper in the layer that you can get of that project will affect more things. So if you break some crypto library, and when I say crypto, not cryptocurrency, but crypto, like as in like cryptographic communications, if you can break that library, well, oftentimes it's shared between Wi-Fi, Meshtastic, and something else, right? So some other like open source thing might even affect Meshtastic. But yeah, absolutely exactly what you said. Anybody can review the code, and some people love finding bugs in the code. I've definitely looked at the Meshtastic repository looking for some bugs myself, so.
Yeah, so they're not just looking for malware, like mal code, like bugs on purpose. They're looking for anything that anybody screwed up. Like it's, you got to have stones to put out open source code, I think. Like, because you have to be confident in your shit. Because just like the person that finds it gets recognition, the person that screwed it up, like they get the negative recognition, right?
100%.
And I'm bringing this up because it has to do with all the stuff we talk about that's open code is subject to this.
Yep. That's like the amount of people that just scrape over the Bitcoin, you know, source code. And they, I mean, you have people crawling that day in and day out looking for different weaknesses that are there. And same thing with, you know, different repositories get different amount of scrutiny. But yeah, if you can find something in there, it is definitely a badge of hacker honor to have a CVE associated with some open.
I mean, that's exactly what I brought up to the Bitcoin thing. You know, Schiff says that when there's the last Bitcoin mine, Satoshi's face is going to come up and laugh at us on the computer or something. Like, first of all, asshole, we'll all be dead. Right? But that's just not how this works. I'm not a hugely technical person, but I understand enough. You know, I can do some basic things with some coding and stuff. And it's one of those things that when you understand how it works, when somebody says something like that, you're just like,
yeah,
I don't even know how to fix this for you because you have a willful ignorance of how this works that I can't even like. You have to not want to understand to be in that place, or somebody told you that and you just haven't looked at it yet. But if you take 5 minutes to understand how open source coding works, how it's reviewed, how it's torn apart by everybody, it's one of the most preposterous things I've ever heard.
Well, and for that example, too, it's like, hey, Peter Schiff, guess what? I could turn the block time from 10 minutes to 1 second and just fast forward in time to see what happens when the last Bitcoin is mined. Like, I could know that in 30 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Especially with ChatGPT now helping me, you know, make sure all my syntax is correct and everything's spelled right. Like you could figure that out immediately. So it just shows ignorance.
We wouldn't know what's going on in the world, but we would know what the code did.
Yeah, we would know exactly what the code did when the block happened because of math. Exactly it. That's exactly math. And so we can just fast forward in time, right? You know, and just make see what that looks like, right? So there's no way that you could hide it in there and have somebody not know, because now I might just see what that looks like. You sparked my curiosity, so maybe I'll take a look at
maybe
that.
Maybe you'll do it?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to throw out last call for questions. I have a bunch of stuff starred. When we get to the end, I'll come back and see if there's any more. And if there aren't, we'll be done. So if you want, this is just like when your bartender says last call. I'm not kidding. All right, Haas says, what is the max distance you can use it, and can a booster be attached to extend the distance? We pretty much covered that. That is the mesh feature.
Yep.
So
yeah. So max distance, my max distance is like 130 miles. Okay. And that's point to point line of sight. So I'm on a mountain and on the other side of California, there was somebody else also on a mountain. And so we could see, like, if you had a laser pointer it would connect right there. So that's about your max distance. You could put a booster, but the way that communication works, you know, I get this question a lot when it comes down to Wi-Fi and stuff, is that when you put a booster on one side of a connection, it's like putting a megaphone in front of your face. So you might be able to talk to somebody. They might be able to hear you, but you'll never hear that message back unless they also have a booster. All so, right. And then you also run afoul of FCC laws. So forget the booster.
The broadcast limitation. Yeah.
So you don't have to really worry about a booster. The line of sight distance is phenomenal enough.
And if you do that, then you know the person on the other end using the same gear can communicate back. Yep,
exactly.
You can reach, they can respond.
Yep.
Bonnie Blue says, how is decentralized mesh superior to one of those gadgets like Zoleo, which turns your cell phone into a texting via satellites where there are no cell towers?
You know, I'm not super familiar with Zoleo, but my guess, it may or may not be superior, but it's different, right? And in my case, a satellite, you don't control the satellite, right? You don't control potentially the service underneath. With this, you own and control and operate every stack of it, right? So you own and control the nodes that are repeating and doing the messaging, right? So my thing, and, you know, obviously a survival podcast, right, is that if you're texting via satellite, you don't own or control that satellite. It can be turned off. You know, you might have Putin get mad at you and, you know, take a thermonuclear device up into to low Earth orbit and knock out a couple hundred, you know, Starlink satellites. So, you know, again, this is terrestrial. It's not space-based. And so the thing that I like about it is that you control the entire stack of everything if you want to.
Well, if you're setting up a channel per point to two people, you also can encrypt that to those two people and no one else is touching it. And I guess the other thing in you know, I'm sure this is becoming less the case, but I have been places, look at my cell phone, signal's gone. Okay, well, I should still be able to use GPS, and that doesn't work either.
Yep.
Right? I have been places where you don't necessarily, it seems like they're everywhere, but I have been places where I couldn't get any kind of lock on a satellite. Now, well, it's been a while since that happened, but it's happened.
And GPS communications break down when you're inside somewhere, obviously. And then if you're in a city with high-rise buildings, you know, even just 10 stories in between you, now when you're looking at the sky and your phone is looking at the sky, there's, you know, a small sliver of sky that's available, so you're not going to get a good lock there. It's one of those things that you're not always going to get a good GPS lock, and you don't control it. And honestly, there's a whole other discussion to be had about the security of GPS, now that that's being used in kind of war zones and, you know, and that's why China and Russia both have their own different, constellations of their version of GPS because, you know, if they take ours out, you know, there's a whole other level of, you know, nation state, you know, battling going back and forth in that.
So I highlighted this one just so you could comment on it because I have no idea what the hell he's saying. But Duke Chair says a way to connect multiple meshes could be unlicensed 22 millimeter using JS8 call at low power.
Yeah, so
you could have just said that like I was a fucking genius. And no, but I have no idea what that means.
That's okay, Jack. I got this one.
I kind of feel like it means create a trunk line across radio, but that's
So basically you bridge. So if I understand this correctly, so JSA call. If anybody does ham radio, it's awesome as far as like it's basically decentralized communications of this, but you can talk from, you know, Fresno, California, all the way to I've gotten as far as like, you know, Auckland, New Zealand on JSA call, right? So basically the way that I'm understanding this is go from a mesh-tastic device to a device that then is a ham radio operated device that goes out. And so there are things that I'm actively working on that I'll release at some point that basically will be a bridge between mesh-tastic and JS8. So you could have a ham radio operator then retransmit a message, you know, thousands of miles away instead of dozens of miles away. And then the other thing too that I'm working on that I think would be, you know, interesting, like as a way to like bridge communications is, you basically have that like repeater functionality of JS8, but then basically making it so you can text message. There's another ham radio technology called APRS where you can basically like send text messages to like your mom or dad that doesn't have, something like that. And so that would be something else that's interesting, but, all things that are kind of on the horizon, that'd be interesting. But yeah, essentially you could use JSA call with this.
Okay. Jeff says, is this just for texting? Can it extend my Bluetooth for my smoker or Wi-Fi so I can put a wireless camera out in my chicken coop? you kind of touched on that. Like, that's just how much do you want to do, I guess, to make it do other things?
So it's not going to extend. It's not going to extend any existing wireless. So you can't extend Bluetooth. You can't extend like Wi-Fi networking or anything like that.
Yeah.
For Jeff, if you're interested in something like that, there's something called Arden. Again, it's some ham radio nerd stuff, right? If you really want to go Google it. But what I might recommend is that if you want to check your smoker thing, right, you can have a temperature probe connected to the Meshtastic, so it's broadcasting that. So you could see that. And then you can also connect these. Again, if you really want to dig into the hardware, if it's not super hard, you can have something like a motion sensor out in your chicken coop, all that kind of stuff, all the sensors that would not use Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, but would basically do the communications over the Meshtastic network.
So it would seem to me that on some level you're doing that for fun, because like I do a lot of stuff with that right now just over my Wi-Fi network.
Yeah.
I guess if you needed to get range beyond where your Wi-Fi reaches to, but like I have this Deco system that I can just add as many nodes as I want to, and I can hit my whole I have a 3-acre property, so it's not like it's a 300-acre property. I can hit my whole property, and I can like I use these thermometers called meter thermometers. Yep. When I'm cooking, like on a smoker, and it doesn't matter where I am, like it attaches to my Wi-Fi. Each device becomes a device on my network, and I can see like what's the temperature of the second pork loin.
Yeah.
Not only here, but when I'm gone, like as long as I have an internet connection. But that would rely on internet. But when I'm on property, it doesn't give a shit about the internet.
Yeah, it's all local. Across
my land instead of the WAN.
And Jeff, too, if that's something you're looking for. So I manage a large camp up in the Sierra Nevadas. And so we use point-to-point ubiquity networks. You can go 15 kilometers on those. Obviously, point-to-point, that kind of stuff, you're talking like $200 per like point-to-point like network that you create. But if you want to extend your Wi-Fi, check out ubiquity. It's all kind of like plug-and-play modular stuff for something like Jack's talking about.
He's also this guy's obviously a ham because he says can you bounce it off the atmosphere like ham radio? And I think not ham radio.
Yeah, ham radio is lower frequency. So ham radio, things you're going to bounce off the ionosphere is in the 7, like, you know, think of like 7 megahertz or 14 megahertz, right?
Yes.
And this is 915 megahertz. So this is going to go, you know, it's going to go hit the atmosphere, and that's as far as it's going to go. The lower frequencies are the ones that you can skip off the ionosphere.
And then Roger T says, comment, router node doesn't need GPS. I'm not really sure what he means by that.
Yeah, so I think what Roger's saying is that your router node, you don't need to have a GPS on it. And that goes for all this. You don't need GPS.
It doesn't move, so you know where it is.
Yeah, and so like what I do, so like this node right here doesn't have GPS. I'm actually going to put it on this building that I'm here right now at.
Yeah.
And so on your phone, you can basically say, like, if you wanted to broadcast the GPS, what I'm going to do is say, use my phone GPS coordinates, lock it as a fixed position right here. And so when it does broadcast, it will just broadcast, hey, it's this location, it's not moving, kind of a thing. The router nodes, you can save $10, $15 by not having GPS on board.
Okay. Jeff says, did you say it has solar built into it, or is it a solar extra part? I think that depends on what you buy.
Yeah, so if you just buy this one that's off the shelf from the Rack Wireless website, I mean, the solar is that panel right there that you can see on the thing. So the solar is built into it. Obviously, you can add your own solar if you want to go DIY something. But yeah, the off-the-shelf one, you can just buy it with solar that comes right then and there. And it's all sealed up with like weather, you know, like there's like a weather gasket in there and everything too. So I've had one of these that's been in 115-degree summers up on a mountain for 3 months that has had zero maintenance done to it. And it's lasted the entire time flawlessly.
Okay, and Dukcher says there is also a BBS people use to interconnect nodes and store messages that run over Meshtastic. So does that mean like somebody with an internet connection that knew where that bulletin board was could see your messages? Is that what he's saying?
So what he's saying is, so if you have, and I think last time I was on your podcast, I talked about a Raspberry Pi, which is like a small, like little computer, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things like Raspberry Pi nerds, or I feel like ham radio nerds, they're the most evangelistic people out there. I'm like, check out my Raspberry Pi. My wife's like, I don't care. It's a computer.
Yeah.
Like, right. You know, my wife keeps me humble. That's for sure. When it's talking about this kind of stuff. But essentially, if you wanted to, you could have a Raspberry Pi in here that is not connected to the internet, not connected to anything, but basically has like some memory capacity in there to host its own offline decentralized bulletin board system. So the Raspberry Pi holds the bulletin board system, so you can have different channels. Everybody can post on it. Basically, it's adding some functionality to this that allows you, you know, so you could send a message to the bulletin board, and it could be still up on a mountain hooked up to a battery pack somewhere.
Okay.
But so the bulletin board system does not need to be connected to the internet at all. It's okay. Just basically add a Raspberry Pi to the device that acts as like the storage medium for the bulletin board system.
Oh, I got you. So it would basically keep a record of the conversation could access if I had access to that device.
And if you have like the key, then certain people can have like write keys to certain things, right? So basically it's keeping the historical. So like if you had your device turned off and Jack sent you a message, you're not going to see that device. You're not going to see that message come through because your device was not online to receive it. Now, right. If there's a bulletin board system, so maybe Jack, the one that goes on your shop building, has the bulletin board system on it, then somebody can leave a message for Jack. Jack hops online, you know, or he turns his device on, checks messages on the bulletin board system. You don't need to then always be online checking to see if a message comes through.
That makes sense. So if I had I'm using my phone as my access device with an app, and you send me a message, but I have my phone turned off, I'll never see it without
that. Yeah, because you weren't.
If I do have it on and I'm sleeping, when I wake up, though, it will be there because my phone's going to store it in the app.
And actually, the handheld device, or so any device that you have, they will store messages for a couple of days on there. So even if you say you were to go drive to the, you know, you, Dorothy, go drive to the grocery store, right? Yeah. And then you come back home and you reconnect via Bluetooth to your device, it will say, you know, here's the last messages. So it does store for a little bit. But if you wanted a more permanent solution that says like, hey, this road is washed out over here, and like, there's, you know, I saw a buck on this ridge kind of a thing. And you wanted to leave a message, you wanted to leave your proverbial Pringle can out there to somebody, that would be, you know, the Pringle can BBS is what we'll call it, right? So.
Okay. Or if somebody was using the power conservation strategy, when they reconnected, they would get all those messages.
Yeah, they get to reach out and see all the messages and that kind of
thing. Okay, that's cool.
That's a more specialized thing that takes obviously a little bit more work to configure because you need a Raspberry Pi and all that stuff, but you really only need one per area because you can access that BBS over the mesh. So you don't need to have one on your property, and you can even sync BBSs between each other. So you could have, say, four BBSs that all stay in sync in unison in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and, you know, utilize that kind of a strategy too. So you don't even need to be within range of the farthest BBS as long as those have time to synchronize. But that's a way more technical topic. My whole goal is not to scare people away on this.
No. When you do a topic like this, you always get the total techno freaks that come in and they want to stretch to what it can do. And that's good. That's fine.
Yeah.
Roger says, can you use any QR code for private channels? I don't really understand that question.
No. So, Roger, you can't just say, like, hey, this is the QR code. Here's your restaurant menu QR code. You can't just say, here's the restaurant menu QR code is your thing. The app will generate a QR code. Basically, the QR code is just an easy way for the phones to share, a key of text. So it basically creates a randomly generated key, you know, randomly generated piece of text that you're going to use to encrypt something. And then it generates a QR code that makes it easy. Instead of having to type out 128 digits, right? Now you just share a QR code. So it just expedites the password sharing process is all.
Okay, we got a devil's advocate here. Chops says, has the hardware software gotten more robust recently? I have seen many people say that Meshtastic is more of a hobby thing than they would not trust for survival such.
I think it depends, right? If you're somebody that's going to use like, you're worried about your survival for anything, then two is one is none, three is for me, that whole thing, right? Then that's where I would suggest, if you're really concerned, be also a ham radio operator. Maybe get some GRMRS, FRS radios, the Meshtastic, like have it be a part of the strategy. I would never, no matter how good it was, I would never rely on one piece of technology for communications, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's great uses for it, but I wouldn't trust any piece of technological gear for health and safety. I
smell ham radio purists in this one. I do. Like, you have to be a level three technician or you're going to die. Like,
yeah. And I mean, like, and that's where I come from.
This is already redundant because I already have a cell phone. Right. And so that this is a redundancy for that.
Yeah.
And you see what I'm saying? Like, it's already a second level.
And that's my thing too, is that for people that say, like, you know, would you trust your life to it? Like, I wouldn't, but like, that's also me. I wouldn't trust my life just to having a cell phone on me either. Yeah. So it's whatever your level of interest is, your level of like security. Other, you know, there's some times where it's like, hey, if I'm going into the deep backwoods up in the Sierra Nevadas, I'm going to have my phone that can do text message via satellite. And yeah. I'm also going to have this as well. Right. So I'm going to have lots of different things. So again, I wouldn't trust anything with my life, or I wouldn't trust any one thing with my life. But, yeah. But I think that this is just a great arrow in your quiver, a great tool in the tool belt kind of a thing.
And I'll just add that I think a lot of people that do a lot of writing that use the word survival situation shouldn't use that word because they don't know what they're talking about, but I'll let that go. I've just heard a lot of survival situation shit that it's like, this person has never made it past a 7-Eleven without stopping for jerky. Robert says, what are the advantages of using PoE? And I have to assume he means power over Ethernet. And I don't know that that goes into this.
Yeah. So Robert, you absolutely, so there are, so looking at like the little rack wireless boards, they sell a PoE module.
Okay,
so
if
if you didn't want to have, say, a battery on your shop building and you have internet out there, you could run a PoE connection to this device.
Oh,
and so
nice.
you could access then potentially data over it if it was a network. So they also sell ones of these that connect to your home network.
Okay.
So instead of connecting the app to Bluetooth, you would just connect it to say, hey, my IP address is 192.168.1.72, right? And so you could connect to it over your network, which is kind of nice because then you could VPN home potentially to go view it. The other thing about having it be PoE is that PoE, for those of you that don't know, basically is the where your Ethernet cable also provides data as well as power to your device. And so if you have maybe say that, you know, your network stack already on a battery backup, then why have batteries up on your roof? Why have batteries that you want to maintain? If you already have power to it that's already on backup, you reduce the need for batteries. You reduce a lot of that complexity as well. Then you can also just like open up another tab on, you know, Chrome or Firefox or Brave, whatever your browser is, and just say, hey, I just want to check my messages on my laptop and not have to open up my phone, right? So you could do lots of. I mean, there's again, if you want to dig into this, you can absolutely do it. But yeah, I like the PoE for that reason. If you can put one on your roof, and as long as you have a Ethernet cable there, then it's already on your core.
As long as you have the power redundancy, because you know, from what you said, I could throw a solar panel up there the size of my hand.
Yep.
It's integrated into the device, and it's running on a CR123 battery, and it's pretty damn bulletproof. And the worst thing I'd have to do is put a new battery in it.
Yep.
Because I got solar. So if my power goes out and I'm having issues with my network due to that, I still have this as long as I can charge a cell phone, which anybody out there that doesn't have like multiple backup chargers and understand that your car is a giant generator that listens to this show, I don't know what you've been listening to. Like, you should have the power redundancy for your phone. And it would seem like, you know, yeah, I have backup power, but that only lasts so long and I have to run a generator, but then I have to go start it up. But the fact that I can communicate as long as my phone works, even if the cell tower is down, that seems like pretty robust as well, that one battery could do that.
Yeah. And like I was saying, with one 18650 battery, like one of the vape pin batteries, right? They're bigger than a AA. You can run one of these devices for an entire week, right? So you stack three of them without solar, you could throw it up in a tree and run for a week with no solar, or you could run for 3 weeks with three batteries in there for a long time. So PoE is definitely one of those things that you can add if you have like a specific use case. But I'm kind of the opinion of you, Jack, is that like, hey, if we just have this off grid always and it's always on its own thing, then you never have to test to make sure that those batteries work because it runs off those batteries all night long and you'll know immediately if it does, if it has an issue. Right. So, that's just my feeling of it, is that there's a place for it if you have a custom need for it. But in reality, I wouldn't even bother with it. I would just put a solar panel device.
Yeah,
that,
you know,
that,
if I needed to throw like two freaking deep cycle batteries out there and build a special bank for it and put up a 250 watt panel or something, PoE would start to look really good. But if I can just throw a box on a thing with a battery inside it, I mean, there's beauty in simplicity.
100%.
And I think there's a lot of beauty in that simplicity, right? Because let's say you said, well, you have to do it that way. I would have been like, well, maybe I'll put one up there. But from what I've heard today, I'm just going to stick one up on the friggin' roof.
Why wouldn't I?
If I don't use it that much, the knowledge that I'm helping this local mesh
Yep.
Is worth a couple hundred bucks and a couple hours of work.
Yeah, and who knows? It could be one of those things that you just end up, you know, you end up needing to use it one time. And that's my thing is that I just have one of these at my parents' house. Verizon, you know, Verizon network doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, if Verizon and Comcast didn't work for whatever reason, you flip this on and no one can stop this from working, right?
Well, like, and to reach some of my knuckleheads out there, all right, how often do I need this?
Yeah.
And for exactly. those on the audio, I'm holding up one of my sidearms, right? I don't have this because I need it on a daily basis. I have it because the one time I need it, I don't want to not have it.
Yep.
Right. It's that simple. Right. So, but I would say just like my wireless hole puncher, right? I go to the range, I go out and I shoot it. I train with it. So I know how to use it. So if I'm in a stressful situation on how it works, I wouldn't advise you going through the trouble of setting one of those up and not use it at all. Go ahead and use it, play with it, you know, set it up for your family. I mean, like, you guys that are my age and younger, right, like, your kids will think you're cool now. You can do cool shit, right? Like, you guys, it works on their phone, and they don't have to know how it works. It's better that they don't. They don't need to know that all you do is plug it in, right? It's better that they don't. Now they think that's smart.
and the other thing, too, is that you can, like, if anybody's interested in this, you can go down a rabbit hole. Like an example of this is that there's so you can make a device like a client, a router, like all those things. There's one that's a lost and found tracker. So you send a message to it and now it beacons GPS live constantly over the network, right? So you could use it as like LoJack essentially.
Oh.
You know, so I mean, there is, you could, like, if you have a pet and you want to attach this to it, lost and found, turn on, and now you can, you know, go find Fluffy or Fido running down the street because there's live GPS on your animal, kind of a thing.
That's
right.
Interesting.
So, you know, so I mean, the possibilities are endless. And if anybody's at all interested in talking more about this, my email is on that website.
Okay.
So like, you can email me. I love talking about this. You'll spare my wife and friends from having to hear
more about
it. Yeah. Cause they're like, we get it, Eric, you're a radio nerd. But the other thing too, is that like, I'll just keep the little handheld radio one in my pocket, go to the store and just say, I wonder if I can send a message home using this. And so you walk to all your normal places and just look and see, hey, can I send a message home from where I am? Can I see temperature reading? You know, there's tons of like other use cases for this, that are out there. There's motion. I mean, you could go down this rabbit hole. My yeah. whole thing is like, look, get a couple of them, play with them for like $100. If anything, you just play hide and go seek with like your kids or whatever and just play with it. But in the event that you do want to actually, you know, use it, now you kind of already have that muscle memory built in.
Here's an interesting little thing on that. Dukejer says, I drive around with one in my car with the GPS turned on, and it will send GPS coordinates back to my home base to see how far you can reach yep. from your node. So basically, you become your own tester.
Yep. And they have a setting, actually.
What does it do? Like, say, ping every 1 minute
yeah,
or something?
You can set the ping. So that's exactly what it does. Is it sends, they call it, I can't think of the mode right now off the top of my head, but you can Google it and find it. It's basically the range test. That's what it is. So
okay.
you put two nodes in range test mode, and it's going to kill your battery because it's sending a message every second, right? It's basically,
sure.
it's exactly like a ping that you would do on your computer. And it just says, here's your signal quality, right? And so you could just go drive all around town, and if you want to get real fancy and you put it into ChatGPT, and you have the GPS coordinates and the signal quality, then it'll build you a nice, heat map of, you know, where the, you know, tough areas of signal are, where the good areas of signal are. So you can build your own, like, you know, display map to see, oh, maybe I need to put a node over here to, like, cover my entire city, kind of a thing. But if anybody's interested as far as how big do one of these scale, I have two nodes that are like on mountains and hills that are like 600 feet up. But they're like out, you know, like 13 miles from like the main core city. And I cover my entire city as far as message capability goes. And I live in Fresno, California, which is, 600,000 people. So it's not small. And it's basically, 15 miles by like 9 miles, you know, in like area wise.
Yeah.
And so I can cover a large part of that. No problem. Just with two big, you know, or two routers, you know, so you're talking less than $1,000. You could have text messaging, with your family and friends off grid, decentralized, that you completely control, which is pretty incredible in my opinion.
Very, very cool. Well, I'm going to call it there. We still have some really technical shit coming in. Maybe we'll come back at this. We'll put out some fillers for more of the stretch to the tech and do a second one, because I'm afraid if we go too deep into all of the things you can do in this episode, we'll turn off people who would really benefit just from picking maybe one up stationary at home and one for their vehicle or both of their vehicles and play with it.
Yep.
Because it's a very low cost entry. It's pretty simple. It seems like if you can install apps on your phone and plug in electrical devices and work a battery, you can probably do this. And so I think if we go too far, as Hunter says here, to the nerd side of things, that will make people think it's harder than it is. So let's call it there. I will say, like, there were some people asking here about, like, Telegram groups and whatever. And Dukeger says he's on the Meshtastic Discord. So clearly they have a I would be shocked if they didn't have a Discord. But I will point out that Survival Podcast, we have a Discord server. And we have a board that's like for ham radio stuff and all that. And I guarantee you there's plenty of people there, because I've seen some of them here that I know are there that know about this stuff. And you can communicate that way too. So if you want to find our Discord, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, click on Get Social, and you'll see all of our different groups and things like that there. But Eric, this has been badass. And before I buy something, I'll probably run some SKUs by you to make sure I'm buying the right thing. But I think I'm definitely going to set one of these up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, if anybody wants to communicate with me, my website is in the notes. I don't make any money off of any of this. It's just purely fun. I made even all the Amazon links on the website are all Jack's TSP, affiliate links. So those are all good to go there. And if you have any questions, you want to go down into the deep nerd level of all this, feel free to email me. I'm also in the TSP Discord, so you'll probably see me in that Discord in not too long. So, but truthfully, if somebody wants to talk nerd, email me. And if we want to do another show about the really technical bits of this, more than happy to. But I agree with you, Jack. I don't want to scare people off by going into Nerdville. I want people just to pick up a pair of these, play with them, see how easy it is, and then realize, oh, man, now I have decentralized communications.
I think that's awesome. All right, Eric, thank you for being with us today. And I do have your website, the Meshtastic site, and some other resources in the show notes today. There's a link down in the video notes there that will go over to the audio side. About 30 minutes from now, that will go up live, and you'll be able to find all of that. So thanks again for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, folks, real quick as I wrap up today, I do not have an item of the day for you. I told my wife this morning, like, my timing and my sense of where we're at in the week, even what day it is all thrown off from being gone for as long as I was. But I do realize now that it is Wednesday. And I will just say, if you want to help support this show, there are some ways to do that. One is whenever you shop online, do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Also want to let you know that you can always take courses at homefoodsystems.com. And we do have the cover crop and soils course now up. All the feedback that has come from people who have taken that course so far has been fantastic. And I really think it's worth the cost we're charging. I disappeared for a second for those on the audio. Anyway, I'm back. I would also say that you want to make sure you realize that there is a free course you can take at homefoodsystems.com on permaculture principle-based design. So if you want to know more about permaculture design, you want a free course. And it's like a five-hour course for free that you can take there. So you might want to check that out. And last but not least, if you become a member of the Member Support Brigade, that's the way we really pay the bills around here and have done so now for about 15 years since we've rolled that program out. You get tons of discounts, and you'll know you're helping the show that you listen to anyway. Comes out to about 20 cents an episode. With that, take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A, and we are finally back to regularly scheduled programming.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.